Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Flesh and Blood and Bone podcast. I am filmmaker Kira Gardner here with my special effects makeup artist extraordinaire dad, Tony Gardner.
That is me, Tony Gardner.
September is a special month because it is my dad's birthday this month. Woo! He's turning 21, you guys.
Again.
Drop that skincare routine. Yes. And today we are going to be doing something a little bit different. If you're watching, the background behind us is actually just the SFX studio.
It's our shop.
And my dad's SFX shop. We film here. And, you know, I just really didn't feel like putting up a backdrop today. I was tired. And it's like, why not show people where we really are?
There you go. You see one wall.
You see one wall of a multi-walled room. And today, instead of talking about a movie as a whole, we're just going to break down the kills from the 2020 film Freaky, directed by Chris Landon, and go over it ahead of an episode where we will have both Chris Landon and Michael Kennedy on the podcast. Let's dive in. I really wanted to give more love and flowers to this movie because it did come out over COVID in 2020, and I think that really hurt the film. It didn't get to have a theatrical release.
Yeah, they shut the theaters down, so
it just went right to streaming, and it's a really fun movie
and fun to see with people.
Yes, which we didn't have that experience in the quarantine times.
Yeah, got to see it recently though on a big screen when they did the Chris Landon retrospective.
Yes,
and the audience was really into it, so it was really fun.
You finally got to see it with an audience.
Yeah, it was great. Now, a lot better than at home. No offense.
Yeah, I think horror movies in general are so much better with people in the theaters.
That's collaborative, and just to go through the experience with other people. That's what makes haunted houses and everything fun.
So true.
You know?
Yeah.
Watching other people freak out is pretty great.
Freak out. Speaking of freaking out, the opening of Freaky consists of a few teens, four teenagers who are talking about the lore of Blissfield, the town that they live in, and this urban legend of the Blissfield Butcher. And of course, in horror movie fashion, the Blissfield Butcher actually comes and butchers them all.
Yep.
Now, I feel like, and I want to talk about this with Chris Landon when we have him on, but when you have a slasher horror movie, there's a few different ways you can go about opening it. You have to set up the horror. So do you have one kill, or is something creepy? Are we opening and somebody's already died? And that's what's sad. But this movie takes it to a new level and you just kill four characters right off the bat in some of the best ways possible.
And you think they're going to be the main characters. I mean, there's a group dynamic. It's established and they're hanging out together. And then they're just all mowed down one after the other in this single setting. So it's like classic horror movie stuff, but it's like a high-end house, so there's a lot of fun stuff to play with. Yes. And that sets up the location for the weapon that causes the whole freaky thing to
freaky
go down.
Freaky Friday, yes.
It's supposed to be Freaky Friday the 13th, but correct. Disney would not allow that.
Yeah, it's like Friday the 13th and Freaky Friday all in one. And the location for these kills is like this very rich mansion. The blonde girl's like parents is an art collector, and there's various masks, one of which is sitting behind us actually, while we're recording this, is the butcher's mask that gets taken off of this like art wall. I want to dive in kill by kill and like really get to the bloody gory details.
All right.
And this first kill is freaky. Let me rephrase that. You've killed a lot of people.
Personally, no.
No, but in film, you've killed a lot of people.
A few.
And in Freaky, it's one of my most favorite kills you've ever done.
Which one?
Truly, is the wine bottle death.
Oh.
And that's the first kill of the entire movie. It's amazing.
It's super. It really sets the tone of what this guy is capable of and how just pure evil he is.
It's sadistic. It's this kid is down in the basement and he drops a wine bottle because they're getting their booze on. And as he's like picking up the shards of glass in true like Chris Landon fashion, his head gets pulled back. We reveal the butcher, and not only does a wine bottle get shoved down his throat and you go, that's crazy, when you see it bulging out of his neck, then the butcher smashes it and shards of glass come out of this kid's neck. And then the body just, it's so good, like limp falls onto the floor. So how do you tackle killing somebody with a wine bottle?
We've learned at this point that there's lots of different ways to achieve what's on the page. So we always ask the directors to storyboard out what they see so we know what needs to be built and what's going to be seen on camera and how the pacing is going to move within the context of the whole thing as well. Chris sketched some stuff out and showed it to us, and we figured out what our build list was in order to kill everybody. And in this particular instance, we realized we needed a fake head of the actor looking up with his mouth open that we could actually jam a real wine bottle into. And then once it goes in, I think he hits it a few times to push it in further. So it had to be sturdy enough to take a beating and still stay solid in the chair. So we built a torso from the waist up that had a silicone likeness head of the actor from, you know, mid chest up attached to it. And that was pretty sturdy and you could really pound on it. And then once that goes in, you could beat on the sides of that as well. But what we did is we also built a prosthetic on the actor that could swell up so that you could see mass going into the neck, see the neck basically be displaced by the mass of the wine bottle. The fact that the bottle is long is what keeps his head straight up. So the chin is up high, so the neck's really featured. So it's like we wanted to make sure we could exaggerate that and get it to bow out larger than it normally would. We had a version of the prosthetic neck that was scored, and we had blood tubing inside it so that it could bleed as much or as little as Chris wanted to based on the way the scene was moving. And then we also had gotten a candy glass version of the bottle of wine and broken that up and sort of pre-shaped a bunch of glass shards that we could have sticking out of his neck, and then we dress those in. So there's sort of a progression where you go from the real actor reacting to what's going on to the fake head getting the bottle shoved into it to the fake neck being pounded on, the real neck swelling, the real neck exploding, the glass sticking out of it, and the real neck, meaning the prosthetic, bleeding out all over everything. And then it was the actor wearing all of that that falls to the floor.
Oh, really?
At the very end of it. That's, yeah, he did a fantastic job.
He has a bottle in his mouth.
Yeah, we had a partial bottle and yeah.
So he was like actually like.
Yeah, he was great.
Wow. And so when the butcher like smacks the neck and the glass like quote unquote comes out, is that in real time or is that VFX to like show that it had come out? Because his hand kind of covers it.
Everything's practical.
Wow. And
if you watch it without the sound, you can realize how much value the sound effects have on the scene. Not just the music for what's happening, but the sound effects of the glass shattering and the gurgling and everything else. There's just so many nice layers to it. And then it's edited really tight. The cool thing is that it takes place in decent lighting. So you actually see everything. And quite often, you don't see much of anything in a horror film. So it was a really strong way to start. And then the other ones, I think Chris and Michael took advantage of the house. Environment of the house and what was in it and what could be done for the other guys. Because one's a bit silly, but fun. Out right. on the tennis court. It reminds me of another film, but I cannot place what the other film.
Where it's like a giant property?
No, where somebody breaks
something. Oh, and it's done time and time again.
And then stabs both sides of the head through the ears. In this case, it was with a tennis racket.
Most recently in Thanksgiving, Eli Roth had corn cob handles.
Oh, seriously?
In either side of the girl's head.
Oh, nice.
If you're thinking of more recent lore. Speaking of lore, I know some more about the second death in Freaky.
What do you
mean?
The
ponytail lore. I don't know how much people know. And I know you're like, what are you talking about? I remember you talking about this when you guys were going to shoot it, of just something that made it easier for the second death for you guys was having the actress in real time in the movie swipe her hair to the side in a side ponytail for when she gets her head bashed in with the toilet seat.
Yeah, otherwise you wouldn't see it.
And that's so great. So like it's it, people might not know it, but that's to help the practical gag in the film is for her to do her hair like that.
Yeah, because you needed the payoff of seeing a real head really getting hit.
Yeah.
You know, so there was a toilet seat that stopped so that she wouldn't get hurt. So they could slam it down towards her. But then we did a likeness head and shoulders of her making the same expression with her eyes closed. And they could actually, the stunt guy could actually smash the head with the toilet seat as hard as he wanted. So he could bring it down and make the whole toilet base actually sort of rock around.
That's pretty cool.
So it, again, so it could be pretty violent. And the lighting in that scene is really good as well. And she did such an awesome job of picking an expression when we life cast her and then committing to that on the shoot day and holding it. And we had the head there so she could match to it as well. But she was so meticulous about making sure that she got everything exactly right on. It makes the scene that much more effective. And then, you know, Chris had her, when she goes into the bathroom, she puts her hair up, gets it out of the way.
Conveniently.
Yes, so that we can see, you know, what's happening later. Yeah. Because otherwise there was really no payoff, because if her head went down sideways and her hair was loose, it was so long, it would probably just cover. Yeah, and we really wanted to show, how violent this guy was, and you shouldn't mess with him.
Yeah.
So that when he shows up later in her body, it's a, you know.
You believe she can do some fucked up shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, because when I first watched that, I was like, who puts their hair in a low side pony, like, and can rock it? I don't know about that. But then that's the payoff.
Yeah.
You get to see the gore, which is great. And when there's blood coming out of her face, is that the dummy head?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And that's just y'all.
Yeah.
Pushing some blood out. It's just
tubing and. Yeah.
Lots of tubing.
Yeah, a lot of blood.
A lot of blood on this one.
Yeah, but I mean, we held back on this instance because it didn't make sense otherwise. We had some in the corners of the eyes and stuff.
It's
just enough to make it seem a little more real.
And like she could die from a toilet seat to the head.
Yeah, you're getting your head smashed.
Yeah.
And again, sound is a big part of that one.
And then for the next death, it's like wine bottle, toilet seat girl. Sorry to the actress. Toilet seat girl and tennis racket man. That's a very simple, you know, break a tennis racket in half and stick the two ends in a person's head. Is that just a digital, like the guy who's the stunt butcher is holding onto two pieces and then you just sort of add in digital a little bit of the edge and then he just puts it on the guy's head?
No, he just ran. Well, we had a skull cap on the actor, a fiberglass skull cap with a wig on it. So he could actually really ram the head. And then we had a skull cap that had attachment points for the racket. So then we could cut away, come back and have the racket attached to his head. And then the butcher could take his hands away. And then the body could fall and hit the ground.
Amazing.
It stays intact the whole time.
And then did you rig some blood tubing to the thing?
We had some, but it didn't really read or register or seem necessary, to be honest. You know, the stuff goes in to the sides of the head and then he kind of drops and you don't come back to it. So there was no need to really embellish it.
And they do this amazing shot of blood going down the tennis racket.
Oh, uh-huh.
Which is pretty great and a really cool shot to have. But it's those little things like it's a very quick death. But, you know, fiberglass skull cap is no joke. And like that takes time.
And the wig was really easy because he had short hair, but it was long enough where it made a wig not be too obvious.
Yeah, I didn't think.
So it was good.
He wears wigs, guys. and then the final death is great because they set it up in the beginning where the butcher is chasing the blonde girl and picks up a spear and throws it at her and it misses and hits the wall, but it has a purpose because it will come in handy later.
Right.
Which is very cool to just see that everything's so thought out and motivated.
Yeah.
And then the butcher is chasing her. And again, she's in the Narnia closet, which is weird because he goes and opens it and she's not in it. And she's in this like back panel of the closet because it goes into another room. And I'm like, girl, why didn't you just stay there?
Yeah. I think she's trying to get out to safety.
Yeah. And then her parents come. So she's like, I'm going to go get my parents.
You think she's going to make it?
a la Scream and Drew Barrymore, which is great. And then she doesn't, and the butcher just straight up lifts her up and puts her on that spear that hit the wall, and it goes through her whole body.
Yeah, and then just leaves her there.
How do you go about that?
That was the easiest one. That was just a dummy body that she just, you know, picked up. And it wasn't even a full body. It was just the amount of body you needed to see in frame for the impalement. Yeah, there was really nothing to it. We knew what we needed to build. So we made it easy for the stunt guy. So that was a quick one to shoot even as well. The cool thing before all this, though, is the butcher is killing everybody wearing the mask.
Already
off the wall, and the only cue you have that he's going to be wearing a mask is seeing the camera pan across all these masks on the wall in the very beginning of the scene, and there's an empty spot, and that's it. And then the mask shows, you know, he shows up in a mask, and you don't know who he is or what he looks like or anything. And I think that that mystery of what his face looks like, I think, is really important. It makes him creepier and evil, more evil. And Chris wanted a very blank stare sort of thing, but he didn't want it to be like a human face like Michael Myers. He wanted something a little more abstract. So we went through old art books, like looked at masks from like thousands of years ago, and picked stuff that wasn't native to this culture here, which made it more interesting. And it served no story purpose in the design of it. It was just something for this guy to hide behind. So the idea was to make it blank-faced and have the eye holes actually be round. But they're also asymmetrical, so everything's skewed a little bit off, and there's really no sense of symmetry. There's a little bit of a skull vibe to it, but it's, again, very abstract.
Yeah, and is there any particular culture, like, you think, because there's and apologies if I am incorrect, but you know, the lore of the knife causing, that's also from this same thing.
Yeah, there was cultural significance to the knife. They tie it to the ancient pyramids and like sacrifice Mayan. and rebirth, like Mayan culture and stuff like that. They don't really specify, which is great.
Yeah.
But when there's those flashback kind of moments, you're on a sacrificial altar on the top of a pyramid that's very similar to what you would see in like Mexico or.
Yeah, because then they go get help from the Spanish teacher to figure
to
out
to translate
that.
The dagger that he steals from the collector's
house
has cultural significance, and it's in a glass case on a display area, but so it's easy to get to and easy to steal and easy to hide. It just so happens this killer picked one that has all these inscriptions on it that talk about the history of this dagger and this magical significance that it has. So the mask almost becomes secondary to the knife. When the knife is used, the eyes, the jeweled eyes in the handle glow red. And I remember Chris talking with the art director and the prop master when they were designing the knife, and it was really all about putting different faces around the sides of the handle that were skulls basically at the very top of the knife. And the jewels in the eyes would signify that something's happening, but each face sort of shared part of its face with the mask on the other side. So there was this sort of overlapping
face
dual reality to the characters on the knife, which is tied into the fact that you're swapping places.
Yes, we have. Is this actual knife? Probably not. Yeah. But it's a replica?
Yeah, the knife was designed, 3D designed and printed out. And then we got the file so we could reference that when we were doing designs for the mask. Because at one point we discussed the mask possibly being more skull-like or skeletal-like. And then we changed direction and went more abstract with it.
Yeah, it's cool. Now I see what you're saying about the...
It's two faces that face away from each other, but on the sides where those, you see just half of each one of the faces, it creates a whole nother person.
Oh, I see. It's like the duality of two people becoming one person.
Dun, dun,
symbolism. Dun. Good job, Chris Landon and team and art team. And then it, holding this in my hand, this replica dagger, there's the inscription on the blade. It's very cool. Yeah, wow, it's really rad. And you could really fuck somebody up with this.
And the idea was it was bone. Yeah. Carved bone for the handle.
For the handle.
The mask has like a skull vibe to it, but at the same time, it's a little, there's a little less anatomy and a little more of a vacant stare in it, which is intentional. We started with a couple that were designed more skull-like, like the one side of this. And it just seemed too obvious as to what it was. And it gave it a little too much personality. And the whole point was to make it devoid of personality so that it was more soulless, and there was someone coming after you that really obviously didn't have an identity or a care. It was just there to slaughter people.
Yeah, or like even attachment to you. So like there's no person for there to be humanity.
Yeah, and then the mask comes off and it's Vince Vaughn.
And it's Vince Vaughn, which is like a, which is so funny.
It was great. He was so good.
Yeah, and that's why I was like super bummed as well. Not only does this movie have great gore, but the acting is great between Catherine Newton. And it's like Catherine Newton, you watch this and you know she's so good. And we know right now she's gone on to do so many things. Abigail. Well, that's the most recent thing I saw.
Yeah, and she just did a movie called Dreamquil that'll be coming out.
Yes. And she's just so great. And like, not as many people knew her at the time. And she was so good in this role. And then Vince Vaughn was also so good at his role and them being each other. It was really cool. And so I was like so bummed that not as many people saw it at the time. But I feel like it's getting more recognition as people rediscover it. As time goes on,
people are becoming aware of it, which is really fun.
Which is really cool because it's really fun. Yeah, and him like... I just rewatched the part where Booker is like passed out and they're in Millie's, I think it's Millie's house or Josh's house. And he's waking up and Millie's trying to like convince him in the butcher's body to like listen to her. And then Catherine Newton's in the corner, but that's the butcher being like, he's lying.
Oh, yeah.
And then he's like, look at me. I need you to pay attention to me right now. And his hands like cover his face. Yeah. The hand movements are just so good.
Both of them are really great at mimicking each other.
Yeah. It's a really cool movie.
Yeah.
To continue on Kills, did you guys do the girl, the bully of Millie, Catherine Newton's character that gets frozen in the cryo chamber?
Yes.
Okay. Let me ask you something. Why does a school have a cryo chamber or whatever that is?
It's a very good question. It's supposed to be part of the health
because they have money?
Aspect of the PE department.
Oh, it's part of
it's PE. Like, here's your ice bath, here's your cryo chamber, here's your steam room.
Girl, sign me up for this high school.
So then, he just cranks it way past what it's supposed to be used for and locks her in. And we just took the actress and did a makeup on her on set. And then she acted the part and acted the fall. And then they did a digital scattering of everything.
Oh, that's not practical. Yeah, because that seems like a kind of hard thing to do.
Yeah, we didn't do any,
body parts.
Yeah.
Not even hand that has the phone? Mm-mm. That's not a real, that's digital?
It wasn't us.
I will ask this because it was a really common question actually for friends of mine in film school. When you're doing a frozen makeup where somebody has to look like they froze to death, how do you go about accomplishing that? Like what materials should somebody use?
Well, we used, it was Andre Freitas and I doing all the makeups on set.
We love you, Andre.
And we used a bunch of, well, first off, we had to figure out what color the light they were going to use in the cryo chamber. So stuff red. And we wanted to see what color her skin looked like in that light. And the DP was putting blue light in there, which took the actress's skin even darker. So we realized that a little would go a long way, but it had to have more opacity to it, like the ice and stuff like that, so that it would read and not have her skin tone read through it. It really needed to register. We use a bunch of sort of like methicillin slime to be sort of frozen water, and then we would put crystals and even salt and stuff like that on top of it to get the sort of crystally crispy look, and did the same thing in her hair, taking the idea that maybe she got wet.
Sure.
And that would be why stuff was happening, because otherwise there isn't really much you can do. It's
to
like
get that across.
You're wanting like sweat and water to freeze. So you sort of take an artistic liberty and push it as far as you can go. And then we just sort of veined up around her nose and her mouth and her eyes just to make them look more messed up. And then digitally she didn't wear contact lenses. Digitally they fogged over her eyeballs. And she literally just held still, and they opened the door. She fell out onto a stunt pad.
She did great.
She was awesome, yeah.
I watched the BTS of that this morning because I thought maybe it was a body because she did so good.
Oh, yeah.
And she does her own stunts, y'all.
Everybody was really into this. Everybody that had to
That's
die.
Really cool.
Yeah.
Did you use that like fancy flaky salt that's like, oh, so yummy?
No.
Oh.
No.
Because it looks like that.
Oh.
Like the fancy flaky.
Like the rock salt?
Yeah, and it's just so good. No. But no.
Most everything was like smaller crystals, trying to make it look more like it froze faster, and it was more, I don't want to say condensed, but like tighter to the body and less theatrical. Like she's been out trudging in the snow for a couple hours. So we're trying to keep everything
condensed,
making a little more sense for the environment, even though it didn't make any sense that she froze that fast and
also looking that they out the have door. That cryo chamber to begin with. That's the only one where I'm like, I don't know, how much do these kids like, how rich is the school?
Yeah,
because it's kind of also giving like small town vibes when she's like walking to the school and Josh picks her up and it's just like really cute, and then you're like, wow, this school is really rich.
The school is actually really nice. It was a real school. The school is pretty new.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, and then they went and changed over all the mascot stuff and put up
the beavers
and all that. But the stadium that they shot at, all that was part of this one school, and it was
massive.
Just so nicely built. So
that's cool.
If I was to wonder if they had a cryo chamber, that would be the school that I would say probably would
have one. Yeah. Yeah. That's fair. And what I appreciated, because it's not taught in every high school, but my high school happened to have this, was a wood shop.
Oh.
And so the woodworking teacher, Alan Rook, is such a dickhead in this movie.
He's so good.
And I forgot how much of an asshole he is in the movie. Like,
oh, yeah. He's so good.
Because he's like, he tells Millie, like, your dog, like, let's see your doghouse today. And she's like, it's not due till like basically a week from when it was. And so she's like, can I turn it in when it's due? And he's like, no, it's due now. And it's just like bullshit that a teacher couldn't really do. But if you've had some messed up teachers, like, I believe it, and you want him to get it.
No, the part's really well written so that you hate him.
Yeah.
Like right away. And he's so good with the delivery. He's such a nice guy. And then he's playing such a dick and so well. You want that character to get taken down. You're cheering the killer in that scene.
Yes, and, absolutely. Know,
that says a lot for both the writing and the
performance.
The acting. Yeah.
Totally. Yeah, which is so funny because I feel like it was just yesterday that we were here at the shop.
Figuring it out.
Yes. And they were doing, my dad and his team were doing mock-up boards for the saw kill in Freaky, and my dad was like, there's this actor coming in today, and like, could you, the killer in this scene is a girl, could you stand in as the girl, which I didn't know was Catherine Newton at the time, and I was like, sure. And this actor comes and he looks so familiar, but I couldn't place it, and I'm so glad my dad didn't tell me who it was. And we did these photos of like placing the saw blade, and as soon as he leaves, my dad's like, do you know who that is? And I was like, I don't know. And he was like, that's Cameron from Ferris Bueller's Day Off. And I lost it. I was like, are you kidding me? That was so cool. So I got to like mock up those photos with him, and he was so nice.
And we were trying to recreate the storyboards, because you draw a storyboard and you draw it based on your interpretation of the camera's at this angle, you're going to see this much of the blade, and then the person's going to be here, and this is how we build suspense. And what our goal was to, well, there were two goals, really. One was to show how thick the blade needed to be in order to be tall enough to cut through a person, how much of that blade is visible out of the table saw. So the blade gets to a certain size, and then it's like, okay, now let's mock up the storyboard drawings with photos to show where, if this is where the person is laying on the table, the person that's holding them down needs to stand this way in order for this shot to work. And it just changes the dynamics of things, but that helps us figure out ahead of time how you can actually really frame it. And then so when you go on set, you know, we've shared all this information and these photos, and we've got a side-by-side comparison of the drawings versus the photos to show the DP and everybody else what it's gonna look like when you do it with actual human beings. And it's always a little different.
Yeah.
So it just makes communication that much better in advance. So you go on set and, you know, you're having to get all this stuff done in a day, and everybody has this point of reference that's really solid. It was really great. But the table saw blade had to come out like over a, you know, yeah, over a foot.
Not OSHA approved, by the way.
So it's like, okay, so let's add in a thing where she cranks it up.
Oh.
So you see it raise higher than it would normally be. So it's justified. And then let's follow the angles that work for, because Catherine's pretty short and
yes,
the teacher's pretty tall. So the dynamic is different. But they had it all, you know, figured out with the fight where she's using the chains from the ceiling to her advantage and stuff like that. And they're playing up the fact that she's smaller than he is. And you don't think she's going to get an advantage at any point. And then she does turn the tables, and it's just beyond what you would expect.
She turns the saw tables, am I right?
Yes, that yes. is true.
Wah, wah. Does that mean that props or set deck or somebody had to rig this?
They had to make the whole table.
Yeah, okay, because of what you just shared.
Yeah, and then we had to rig it with blood tubes to shoot
yes.
blood off of the saw blade. It's moving fast enough to really, I mean, the blade was massive. It was like 3 feet across.
It's
a real blade that people really use. So they had that built into a smaller table, and it really got up the RPMs to the point where we could take the dummy of Alan and push it through and it would cut it. But in order to cut into something, the blade is coming down at it. So in order to, because otherwise it would be spitting, it would be throwing him, his body up into the air.
Forward.
Yeah, so the blade's coming down on what you're pushing through. So whether you're pushing a piece of wood or a human being, the blade is rotating towards you. So in order to get spray up, we had to play with the direction that it spun. We had to put blood tubes to it so that the blood would actually spray off the back end of it. So we had to put tubing on Alan, well, Alan's dummy. We had different version dummies of him, but one dummy was a solid one that had blood cavity in it and stuff. And that was something you could actually push through and it would spray. And then we had another one that was already pre-cut in half. It had blood tubes the whole way. And it had a thing sort of like a zipper that held the two halves together. And the zipper was connected to the table so that when Catherine pushed the body forward, she's basically pushing it off of the zipper so that the pieces can separate right at the blade so that it looks like it's feeding into the blade and the blade is doing it. So if you're angled down low facing her, you're seeing the two sides separate, but you're not seeing the point of connection, which is already disconnected, but hidden and then sort of like stitched together with literally metal rings with a metal rod through it that gets left behind when the body's pushed forward and off of that pole. So there's a lot of stuff to figure out in order to make it work. And then we realized that the saw was spinning the blood up and out on the opposite side of the blade. And we're putting all this blood into the front on him and everything else. It's like, where's the blood going? And we were shooting in a dim room. We were shooting in the gym, and we'd blacked it out so that the focus could be on this and the lights were down low, because it's, you know, after hours in the school. The air is red. The blood is vaporized, and we're all in a cloud of red from the saw blade spray just shooting up so fast. It was like a spritzer bottle of blood. There was like nothing that was like solid, but all the solid blood that was shooting off of Alan's body prior to hitting the blade, you know, because we had all the blood tubes in the body. So as they hit the saw blade, blood could continue to shoot up from that side. That stuff we just shot, like, I don't know how many gallons each time, just so that you could see stuff, because you couldn't see any of the stuff coming off the other end of the blade.
Was it maybe also because the saw blade was going too fast?
It's going way too fast. So it was vaporizing the,
wow,
the blood. Yeah.
And was that while you guys were going for takes, or was that during your test footage?
No, that was while we were shooting.
Oh, God. Is that, can I ask you something? Is that nerve-wracking when you're like, oh, shit, we have to figure this out and we're under the clock and all this blood is like freaking vaporizing in the air?
Yeah, that just meant that we, because we had blood on both sides, mm-hmm. you know, we had it on the end of the, we had two tubes that shot blood onto the blade so the blade would carry it up. And then we had tubes in the body that would shoot it straight up out of the body. So the tubes that were feeding onto the blade, that's all that was vaporizing. So we just went, we sort of doubled down on the body, going more extreme with the pressure and the amount, the volume of blood that came out of the body, so that we made sure that it would read.
Wow.
So there's different takes of her pushing the body through where there's tons of blood and then there's a little bit of blood. And so there were options. And if they yeah. wanted to digitally enhance it after the fact,
that's
they could.
Great. All you need is just like a little bit of practicality, so you know which way it's going to go and how the light's going to hit it. And then you can add.
Yeah. And then we shot some of it actually in the woodshop room proper.
Yeah.
Prior. And we had the table set up and we had these big lights and reflectors behind us. And the place was pretty much brand new, you know.
Oh, right. Oh, you fucked that up.
So that one, the one that we shot in the room, was all the practical spray. We weren't getting into the heavy duty stuff. And it was going up and it was disappearing and it wasn't coming back down. And we're like, where's the blood? And somebody behind the lighting was getting drenched because the blood was literally shooting up, going, arcing over the lights and the reflectors and just showering down behind it, behind all of us where we couldn't see it. So, but you could hear it because it sounded like somebody was taking a shower. So at a certain point, you know, when they said cut, everybody's like looking around. They're like, what's going on? And then the person who was back behind them went, it's all right here.
It's all over here, girl.
And it cleared the lights and everything, like cleanly.
Well, thank God for production insurance.
And then
right?
It was just this big, massive puddle on the floor. And then we readjusted for that.
The poor people who were so far back, they're like, it's not going to get me.
It did. And we shot that actually before we shot the gymnasium scene where the blood vaporized. We thought we had a handle on everything when we got into the gymnasium and shot the close-up stuff. But that's when it was just, you know, you're breathing in a cloud of
blood.
Instead of it being smoke in the air,
it was crazy.
Red. Yeah.
It's interesting. You learn a lot about like science and anatomy through this stuff, but it's similar to my dad and I were just talking about this the other day, is when there's a gunshot in a film, what happens in real life is if you were to actually see an entry wound, it's so small.
You can't find it most of the time.
Yeah. Yeah. But the exit wound is where all of the blood comes out. Mm-hmm. And in movies, we do it the reverse way, where the entry wound is actually the exit wound so that you can see and understand it.
It's kind of, Well, the exit wound is usually way bigger than the entry wound.
Yes.
Because everything's blowing out. So Dick Smith on The Godfather did this thing. They wanted to see the bullet hits. So he sculpted all these like sort of little craters that had a red interior and had like blood in them. And then he had little wax plugs that were on wires that were blended into the skin so that on camera he could pull all those wires. So the guy's face went and turns into cheese and you're seeing holes in it. And then the holes could bleed. And it was all done for the graphic of it so that there was something more visual. Because they said, I remember Dick saying that if you shot a real gun, they had a, you know, they had people on set that were explaining everything. He said, usually it closes up and it makes sort of like a little Y shape. And a lot of times you have to look for the entry wound.
Wow.
But the exit wound is always massive. And that's what helps you find the point of entry.
Wow. So it's, we're just like making shit up. And
so yeah, it's all done for visual enhancement. Yeah. Of something. So it's like the guy with the wine bottle in the beginning of this movie, it's like, okay, if we wanted to be realistic,
yeah,
all those shards of glass would be in his throat if you were able to actually break it, you know?
Yeah.
But first off, you'd have to break his jaw
to
be able
get
to
it
get
in
a
there.
Bottle in there. Yeah. So it's like there's always a suspension of belief and you're pushing to see
How far
you can go with it and have people still buy that it's real. And in most of these instances, it comes down to the actor selling that it's real and then the presentation of it, you know, the follow through looking real. It's like a magic
sound
trick.
Design. Yes.
So it's the presentation. It's the framing of it and the presentation that makes you buy it.
And similar to knowing about the bullet wounds is the saw, is knowing that it goes down when
yeah.
it's cutting.
So it would fold everything into the table.
Technically, yeah.
Because that's where all the sawdust and everything goes.
Smart.
That's where all the pieces of the sky would go. But it's like, well, that's not so
helpful,
visually interesting. How can we mess with this?
In an alternate, like realistic version, she puts like the body through and it just shoots out the other side because it just like flings it.
Yeah, it's like, you know, if you're doing it right, it's not that interesting to watch. So you have to kind of make more out of it.
Was Freaky your first time splitting somebody's body in half?
Yes.
Okay. And then
yeah, because this happened before
Studio 666.
Yeah. This is our warm up.
Yes. I was about to say. So in Freaky, it's Alan Ruck's character gets sawed in half with a table saw. And in Studio 666, Rami
and Whitney.
And Whitney, right, get chainsawed in half together while they're having sex.
Right.
What?
Naked.
Naked, yes.
We upped our game.
Yes. What did you learn from the first go around with Alan Ruck's character in Freaky that helped you saw Whitney and Rami in half?
Well, we knew with the Studio 666 version of doing something like this, we were going to go even cartoonier.
Okay.
And like way over the top.
Yeah.
So I think the goal was here, how do we make this one realistic with Alan Ruck and make it believable? And it was really all about having a loose jointed body so that when she pushed it through, the pieces would flop like a real body would. It was still light enough for her to be able to push it through because the reality is, okay, that would be 170
yeah,
pounds.
Yeah, I'm not pushing that.
That she's sliding across this table, you know, super easy. And she is supposed to be Vince Vaughn in another body, but still,
yeah.
You know. So we learned a lot there and learned a lot about the whole connection of the two halves of the body and how to make it work and how to make it work to camera. And that was the most important thing, is figuring it out to camera. So when we went and did Studio 666 and Rami's on his hands and knees suspended in air and Whitney's below him and we have this chainsaw coming through, it's like, how do we make it peel open so that it's the two halves flop apart? But it's done in a totally cartoony style because they're stationary the whole time this goes. And we thought it would be playing out closer to real time, but they just have fun with it. And you see all of it on screen. And there's like 150 gallons that are hitting the ceiling. and soaking the floor and going, we ruined the whole place.
Yeah.
With that. And then after it's done, after the chainsaw is through, then the bodies go like this, split a little bit. And then the two sides
fully
flop. So we did a whole thing with magnets and then a cable rig inside the body to make the two halves come apart and separate. But everything was self-contained within them and the bed was fake so we could be
right
underneath it doing all that stuff. But we got a little wet.
Drenched. I was there shooting BTS and girl, let me tell you, there was blood everywhere. Same thing up on the ceiling and you could hear it like rain just pitter-patter down back onto the bed.
Yeah, and they had a bounce card. They had a piece of foam core and a sheet above that to bounce light and hopefully protect the ceiling. Everything was red.
B camera.
And just dripping. And in the shot, it's dripping. When the chainsaw leaves or the two halves of the body separate, there's stuff dripping down in the shot
on them
from the ceiling.
It's crazy. So,
yeah.
That was so fun. I encourage you guys to watch this episode because I have some BTS clips I can share of that that you haven't seen before, maybe. And you can see the craziness of that. And where was the blood tubes rigged onto the chainsaw for that? The fake chainsaw?
Oh my God.
It was because we did it in sections. You guys would call out like 1, 2, 3, 4, and one by one, these rigs.
Yeah, and those were, there were some that were just mounted in the track
of the chainsaw.
The chainsaw went.
Oh, cool.
Because we learned with the saw blade.
In Freaky,
that the chainsaw is going to spin the blood around, and it's not like you're aiming it somewhere. It's going to go wherever it's going to go based on how thick it is on it at the time. And it's just going to be flung off. We had blood shooting up the sides of the chainsaw more than on the blades. And then we had like a row of valves or hoses that shot up in a line through the body. And then Rollis Khan was the guy who rigged all the blood on this. And Rollis is amazing.
I love Rollis.
With this kind of stuff. And he also had put sort of like, I don't know how to describe them, but they were basically like air cannons filled with gunk and goop and shit in the bed. So that as the chainsaw is going through, there's also just junk blowing up into the air. And I don't know how much of it you see, but it's like this whole bed thing was just this. It was like if someone was doing fireworks, this would be the pyrotechnics
of that
display for the finale.
It's crazy.
And this was just Rollis just rigging blood and doing such a great job. And he was mixing the blood and he had all the 55-gallon drums. He had everything pressurized and was just super on top of it. I mean, he's just so skilled at what he does.
Yeah.
And he did it so well. We used up I think we had 150 gallons total and we used all of it.
We used all of them. Remember when they were like, we're going to shoot this in the room for real?
Yeah.
That was crazy.
Yeah.
Would have been completely ruined. But that's okay because it was bulldozed anyways, the house that we shot in anyways.
After all the cleanup.
After all the cleanup of all that blood, y'all.
Yeah.
Anyhow.
That's another movie.
That's another movie you should go check out for this Halloween season, Studio 666. And getting back to Freaky and the kills there, the next sort of set of kills is all these sort of football players in the homecoming scene. And there's we've got multiple things. We can talk about them out of order, but basically there's an off-screen decapitation. There's a slit throat moment. There's a hook in the eyeball moment, and then there's a chainsaw to the penis moment.
There's a lot.
We don't see any nudity. It just, there's a chainsaw and it's in that direction, and we see sort of the aftermath.
Yeah, and then it's just a blood tube. And
yeah. So is there anything you want to dive into there? Some of them is pretty, you know, straightforward.
I think it's pretty straightforward. I mean, we did a cast of the guy who gets decapitated, build a fake head.
Yeah.
I think Andre already had a dummy body.
Great.
So that was dressed up and it's a reveal of it after the fact. So that's really easy. Chainsaw to the crotch is a chainsaw to the crotch with a blood tube just spraying blood up. So that was pretty straightforward. And then one of the guys is standing in front of a wall and a fist punches through and he's got a basically an old school ice hook, which is a handle, the big curved hook on the end of it. And his hand comes through the wall around this guy, if I was the guy, goes like this, and then comes back, and the hook goes straight into the guy's eye, and the guy gets pulled through the wall, and you don't see him again. And we built a full head of the actor, full head and shoulders. So we had a dummy from maybe mid-torso up in the shot. We used a camera slider and put the hook on that so that we could control it coming at the head at exactly the right height and placement. And then it was all about the speed, and it would slide exactly, because we needed to get this hook right into this eyeball.
Right.
And we made these eyeballs that were soft silicone that you could puncture and they would spray blood. We wanted to make sure that we didn't land the hook in the forehead or anywhere else. So we had this dummy head, and then the hook would pull back towards the guy's head, towards the dummy head, and the hook could actually go into the eyeball and it could spray. And then we had a makeup on the actor that was a prosthetic of this area, and it had a hard covering for his eye, his actual real eye. And we had cast that hook and made a really lightweight version that could actually attach to that. So for a close-up of the guy screaming as he goes back through the wall, we could have a hook in his eye, and he could really be reacting and stuff like that, because the dummy head is static.
It's only going to get you so far.
Yeah, but it's such a quick shot.
I know. It's so much work for such quick shots.
But it works with the dummy head because it's...
Absolutely.
You know, because practical. It's so quick.
Yeah.
And then you don't see him, and you don't see the aftermath. So you don't know really what happens to him. So
safe to say he dies.
Yeah, you would assume. So that was it for his effects. It didn't go any further than the puncture and the pull through the wall. So that whole sequence was pretty basic as well.
Yeah, there's so much you can do. There's also like so much you can do. I can't talk about it yet because it's in my movie, but there's the high end version of some things you can do. And then there's a lot to be said for what you can cheat.
Oh, yeah.
For some stuff like that. And we did a little cheaty moment recently that involved some similar things to the end of Freaky. And it was really cool to see a lot of tricks, you know.
Yeah, there's a lot of options. And it comes down to what angles you want and what you actually want
to see
on camera.
Yeah. And then I think those are the last people who die.
Yeah.
Because I guess technically the butcher gets killed with the chair leg that Catherine Newton's character grabs and stabs him through the back of the chest.
Yeah, and that we didn't really have anything to do with that.
Yeah, because I'm sure you could just hand a stick, or the prop people have the stick, and you're like, shove it through a torso, guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is there anything else you want to add, Dad?
No, I think, you know, we covered the mask, the deaths.
Yeah, the deaths. And hopefully, you know, we'll have Chris Landon and Michael Kennedy on to do a full, you know, episode on Freaky itself and just making the movie and your guys' work together, I think is going to be really fun. So hopefully this was a good warm up to like all the gore lore.
This is the kind of nuts and bolts of the gore.
Yeah, because it's such great gore, and I think it deserves its own breakdown and like just going piece by piece. No, I'm not joking. Like I watched that and I'm not kidding. Like that wine bottle death is still one of like my favorite deaths ever. The blob takes first place, but that comes close second.
It's cool. So it's really well written script, and the actors were just so good. I mean, Vince Vaughn and Catherine playing each other.
Such a good
just
idea.
To be on set and watch the two of them sitting in chairs watching playback and figuring out body language that was more indicative of their characters for that shot, and the communication between the two of them. It was really cool.
I love that.
Yeah, it's a nice environment.
Yeah, I would imagine so. Well, I think that's wraps us up for this episode.
There you go. Hopefully. Freaky deaths.
Freaky deaths. We hope you stay tuned for the full Freaky episode with Chris Landon and Michael Kennedy. We hope you have a great rest of your September. This will come out like with like 2 days left, a day left of September. But we welcome you into October.
Yes.
Happy spooky season, guys. Happy Libra season. We are two Libras.
And what should we talk about for October?
I still got to figure it out. I'm a working girly. I'm trying to finish my movie in post-production, yo.
You tell us what we should
cover. Ooh, yeah. What should we cover? We should cover. There's lots of options. Let us know, because nobody really lets us know. We say let us know, and nobody lets us know. So let us know.
There's a whole comment section. Use it.
Use it. And go check us out on YouTube, because we are inching closer and closer for me to be able to monetize my YouTube channel, which just means that I could get, you know, extra gear, extra equipment, or help pay for an editor and things to really help out on the podcast. So if we can build the YouTube channel together, guys,
there you go.
Then there's more we can do with it. So,
sounds good.
Happy October, and we will see you next month. Bye.
Bye.